I think with regulations, I kind of look at them like condiments at the dinner table. So salt, if you put a little bit of salt on your steak, it can make it amazing. But if you unscrew the cap and dump the entire bottle on your steak, you're going to ruin it. So that's how I look at regulations.
Welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Elizabeth Holtrup. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Carl Falk. He is the CEO of the cybersecurity firm BotDoc. And Carl, welcome. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, Elizabeth, thanks for having me on. As you said, I'm the CEO of BotDoc. We're a cybersecurity company, but really we're a technology that kind of reduces a lot of friction. So we're a little bit of an anomaly. But, you know, my background, I'm a Air Force Academy graduate, played football there back in the 90s. So I'm an old washed up has-been. even though you'll see some Air Force stuff in the background, my son's actually going to be going into his senior season and he plays football there. So cheer for 75 if you're a football fan this fall. So he's the starting left guard. But, was in the military for years and then transitioned out, worked for Booz Allen Hamilton, a big consulting firm for many years doing government related consulting, but really got rolled into a lot of emerging technology in those roles, especially post 9/11, trying to expedite technology out of the national labs into the warfighter's hands. And it was a very rewarding job. And at some point I needed to transition and do something on my own. And years later, here's BotDoc. So that's just a nickel tour of my history.
Well, first, I always have to say thank you for your service. And I'm sure you hear that a lot, but on behalf of myself and all of us, thank you for your service. Thank you for the time your family, I'm sure, has poured into serving our country. We appreciate it. I'm excited to talk with you about that background that you do bring to now you work in a role where you assist banks in technology issues. But you did have a long career working on emerging tech issues. How does that cross over into banking? How do you take, you know, military grade leadership and technology issues and put them into helping bankers with security? Where's the overlap? I'm sure there's a lot of it. So I'm excited to hear about where the overlap comes and how bankers can benefit from that.
Yeah, well, Elizabeth, I'll be honest with you. One of the biggest challenges with any technology, whether it's security related or not, is are my people actually going to use it? That's one of the biggest challenges because there is an inherent trade-off between security and convenience. So when you sit back and actually say, hey, we're going to go buy this, we're going to put all this stuff in place, and then your operators, your sales staff, anybody in your institution, in your bank, basically is going, okay, well, I've got Betty Sue who's calling me saying she can't figure this out. She's locked out and I'm playing IT, support for her all the time. So I'm just telling her to text me this or email it to me. It'll be fine or whatever the scenario is. So a lot of times, you just get people doing what's easiest, not because they're lazy, but because they want to make the best possible experience for their customers. And honestly, from a community bank, standpoint, that's what they are. They're about the community. They're about the relationship. So, I actually think a lot of the community banks have a harder challenge with this than even some of the mega banks, the national banks, because there's an expected layer of customer experience, customer support. And sometimes when you start molding your process at a bank around the technology, that's when problems happen. When technology augments your process at your bank, it makes it better. And I think that's a challenge and it's not easy. I'm not saying that it's easy at all, but those are the problems we see. And this isn't just banks. This is, we are in a lot of different industries. We're in wealth advisory, banking. We're in the automotive space, healthcare, and they're all the same. They're all different, but they're all the same. But the same issues is I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges that will face any company, whether it be security or not, is the technology actually. Is it making your process better or is it making it worse?
That is really interesting. I appreciate that summary. And something I honed in on what you said just a few sentences ago is that it's a challenge to make sure that a bank or any company is not working around the technology, but rather they're having the technology work for them. And that is a really interesting way of thinking about it. It totally makes sense to me. How would you advise bank technology teams to work with their management to explain some of these issues? Technology is often seen as a cost drain, especially when it comes to the security side or the compliance side.
Yes.
It's like a necessary evil. Nobody wants to have to pour money into something behind the scenes when they'd rather be, you know, focusing on customer relationships, marketing, budgets going there. How do you talk through with banks to justify the expense of some of what they have to pour into their security teams, and thinking through some of those layers of cost benefit analysis?
It is a necessity, and it is a challenging conversation. You know, some people see it as a tax, right? Just a tax to do business. Like, you have to do an audit every year. You have to do this. You have to do that. But at the end of the day, you know, the fact that we're seeing CIOs or CISOs sitting at the board table for large institutions it is a sign that, you know, it is important because we are fighting a battle, and it's a battle you just don't see, and it's an adversary that is not a big, large nation state. It is a, it is small factions of people who have access to the internet. And and that's what makes it challenging. And whether people are doing white hat penetration, where they come to you and say, hey, we found something, pay us a bunch of money, or you're getting the other side of it, where they say, hey, we put something in your system and locked you out, and now you owe us a bunch of money. And sometimes they're both. So those are the inherent just facts that we're dealing with. As a nation. And the one thing that I think is important, and we've had to have this conversation with automotive dealers, because they were not regulated for cybersecurity until 2023.
Oh, wow.
It is hard to believe. It is mind blowing, because think about all the financial information that they have. Everyone's financing their cars, leasing, et cetera. So they were never regulated per the U.S. government until 2023. So these are the conversations we have to have with automotive dealers, because they're sitting here going, this is horrible. I hate the FTC. They're making things worse for us. And so they're feeling some of that pain right now, because they didn't, they grew up with just doing things how technology evolved, and not having to worry about being more, have more perspective. But this is the point I want to drive home, is the government is not putting regulations in place just because they're the big government and they like regulations. Some people say that is true, but the U.S. government has come to the conclusion that they can no longer protect the U.S. consumer by themselves against all the things that are going on, especially with the advancement of AI. So they have now basically agreed and said that we have to push more onto industry, not because big government, but because they're actually trying to protect us as the U.S. citizen against cyber threats, identity, et cetera, et cetera. So they're pushing more and more. So I think you're going to see, especially with AI, I think you're going to see a lot more things that the U.S. government is doing. And there's some things that are happening right now that are going to start trickling down. And we can talk about that later, but start trickling down to private industry. But I think everyone needs to understand that at the end of the day, if your business is locked out and you have an exposure, you don't just have a government issue or a brand issue with your customers, you also have a litigious issue, unfortunately. And that's how you justify your security budget, because you just don't want to have that issue. Just as you put locks on your doors, that's a physical security that we had to worry about for a long time. Now we have to put locks on everything else. And that's just a matter of the fact. unfortunately.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And I especially like how you talked about the concept of regulation, because we certainly get bankers or people across any industry who's kind of like, hey, hands off my industry. We don't need government coming in and telling us what to do. There's often kind of a stance that the market will self-correct itself, or, you know, under capitalism, businesses will do what they need to do to survive, meaning we don't need regulations. It's common sense.
Yes.
I like how you summarized that sometimes the regulation is just for the government to loop in private industry to help with the role of protecting private citizens. And sometimes, I personally sometimes view rules and regulations as a way that the government can alert folks in the industry that maybe they didn't realize this is an issue that they need to be paying attention to. Like you mentioned, the automotive industry, maybe they just didn't realize the levels they needed to be thinking about because it wasn't necessarily a conversation within the industry.
They did not. They did not. And when you start, when we would walk prior to 2023, when the regulations went into place, when we would walk into a dealership and ask to see, you know, a salesperson's phone and ask them how many pictures of licenses or anything PII related from customers were in their photo camera history, and it was alarming. It's because they're just like, oh, hey, text me. I need a copy of your social security card or your birth certificate. I'm not kidding you, right? A bank should be like, oh my God, how did they get away with it? But, and there's a lot of turnover in that industry, right? Mm-hmm. So 60 to 70% turnover in your sales staff. So it was a problem. It was a real big problem, and it's not fixed yet. You know, I think, you know, they're getting there, but if you talk to a bank about that, they'd be like, oh my gosh, no, we can't do that. Well, unless you're regulated. But I'll say this, I do, I am a big fan of keeping the government out of my business. But I think with regulations, I kind of look at them like condiments at the dinner table. So salt, if you put a little bit of salt on your steak, it can make it amazing. But if you unscrew the cap and dump the entire bottle on your steak, you're going to ruin it. So that's how I look at regulations. I think there are some regulations that actually make things better, but we don't want to ruin the steak either.
What a common sense, logical approach to viewing regulation in industry. I love that. You know, it's kind of like a speed limit. You know, most of us probably would go a sensible speed limit anyway, but there's always going to be the people who's trying to go 50 miles an hour over the speed limit. So let's put some reasonable caps in place.
Or under the speed limit.
That's the worst. That is way the worst. Under, and it actually can be a safety issue on like a freeway to go too slow.
That's right. That's right.
I'm the one who never wants anyone to go too slow. Just keep it moving. You did mention a little while back AI, and that is such a hot topic. I would love if we could talk about that a little bit. A fast rise right now of AI, machine learning. It's bringing to light new vulnerabilities that banks and other industries have to deal with. Can you just talk a little bit about your thoughts on, to start with, how we got here? Because you have such a broad past experience professionally seeing emerging issues. It might be interesting to hear your thought on how we got to the point where we have such a rapid rise of AI, and why are some industries playing catch up when there were signs for quite a while that we were going to be grappling with this new technology?
Yeah. So I was, funny enough, I was just talking about this yesterday with some colleagues, and a little over 3 years ago, I was at an event in California, and there were some very prominent individuals there. And I was at a dinner event, and we were talking, and there was a big hubbubaloo about quantum computing and AI. So this was, I think, May of 23. Okay. And so this is really before AI. I mean, it was there, but it not like it is today, right? And their part of the table was very pro that quantum computing is going to be the next big thing that, you know, kind of redirects our country or the world. Mm-hmm. And I was more of the proponent that AI would. And I kind of spoke up and I said, and I was not the I was the minority at the table about AI. But I said the reason AI is going to be much different than quantum computing is the average person, as far as the impact to our to the globe, is because the average person is going to be able to leverage it and use it. So I look at, like, years ago, it was all about blockchain. And there are some great things happening with blockchain, but the typical average person, I would say even like probably 80% of the country, has no clue what the heck blockchain is or how to leverage it or how to use it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. 99.9% of the country can sit in front of Claude or ChatGPT and ask it questions and learn and get more information. And it's why, you know, browsers now have AI in them. Because they know that the typical browser of the past of web search is gone. And I think that's the fundamental difference, that why everybody, every industry, banks really need to have a little bit more of a thirst to understand where AI is going. It's because everybody in the world, as long as they have access to it, can understand it, just like sitting in front of a Google search page and typing something in. So that's the difference. And that's why it's happening so fast and it's becoming so prevalent. Now, AI combined with quantum computing is really scary.
Yeah,
I will be honest with you. That is very, very scary. I think that we will see in the near future, the conversation, and it's already starting to happen, is at what point is encryption irrelevant? And that's a big conversation that's bigger than this podcast, but there's going to come a point in time where we have to rethink a lot of things, and we need to start doing that now, because at some point in the encryption that we know today, and I'm not talking about just adding more bits to the encryption, it's the fundamental baseline of the encryption is going to become irrelevant, and that's scary.
Do you see any solution to replacing the reliance we have on encryption for privacy and safe data transfers? Are there solutions being talked about? Because my first thought is, well, now we're in trouble. I mean, I totally see where you're going with AI and machine learning combined, or quantum computing combined, encryption can be cracked like that easily.
Correct.
What is the solution beyond carrying things around in briefcases again?
Yes, and there are, well, that is a solution. There are things that are recording today. There are things that have been recorded for a long time. I think, you know, like years ago when it was found out that the Chinese government had infiltrated the UN's servers and they were just sitting there listening. They didn't do anything. They were just sitting there listening.
Yep.
They were just listening. And there's a lot of things on the internet listening, because at some point the encryption will be able to be cracked. So that to me is a fundamental reason just to really push this now. And there are new things coming out in the world of encryption. But I think we have to think about this more like a military, more tactically, is how are there different ways that data can be moved across the internet? And what's the right place and ability to save it? Because I think, and this is what's going to drive things to move very, very quickly. It's exciting, but it's also a little bit scary. So I think there's going to be a lot of conversations over the next 5 years, in the next couple of years too, that, we're kind of rethinking what our baseline was from, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
No, that makes a lot of sense. From a human standpoint, just on a personal level, was always very excited about emerging technologies, new technology. I would be an early adapter throughout my career and just, you know, my adulthood. I am at a stage where I'm finding myself a little bit exhausted by the rapid rise of technology. And I find myself going to this nostalgic place where, you know, I remember learning to type on a typewriter. I'm that old, you know, learning to type on a typewriter, or, you know, I remember my dad actually did carry a briefcase with his work papers inside a briefcase. And I find myself with a certain level of nostalgia, or thinking it would just be easier if we went back to that. How do you approach the mental human element when you work with banks or anyone else? How do you approach that that element where people like me, my brain is just having a hard time keeping up and thinks it would be easier just to go back to other times.
And this is, I love this question because there is an aspect of exhaustion with tech, because, you know, it's like, oh, I have to use this for this. I have to use this for this. And then, you know, sometimes you get hyper focused on this and you're like, oh my gosh, like I need to go over here and do this. And I have this LOS. I have this system. I have this system. Like, oh my gosh. And there's not enough money on the planet to integrate them all. So this is the way that I look at it is, and this is an important conversation that any institution, any bank really needs to have about tech, is how are people going to use it?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of great solutions out there, but when you actually like think about it and say, but how are we going to use it? Mm-hmm. That's where the real discussion needs to come. Because a lot of times IT departments, God bless the IT people, but sometimes they get so much in their world that they have no idea on how it impacts the actual operations and how it's going to be used. So one of the key things we talk to about with all of our customers is look for tech that can run agnostic to your people doing anything. So anything that can run in the background is great, because then there's less things for them to have to think about, right? Sure. Because technology is enabling the human to do so much, our brains are spread really thin. It's not as easy as printing off some paper and sticking it in our briefcase anymore, right? Because think about, you know, you personally, Elizabeth, I'm sure you're very similar like me. I have text, which is becoming spam now. I have several emails. Mm-hmm. We use Slack internally. We use another tool called Roam for kind of our distributed offices, where there's DM messaging there. I have LinkedIn messages that I get. I have, you know, WhatsApp. I have Signal. Right, there are so many things that I have to check because, and we use different things for different security purposes. So my advice and our company's advice to any company is always ask the question, how is this going to, sure, we need it, but how is it going to impact our staff?
Sure.
And if the impact is too great, you know that people are not going to use it. Sure. Or there's going to be issues. So always look for those things that just run, you know, security by design. We talk about a lot of times, and stuff that just runs in the background.
I really like that piece of advice. And I feel like not only can it apply to technology, but it can apply to so many business processes. I work with banks somewhat on technology compliance, but also on a lot of other types of banking compliance. And it seems to me like that's a really broadly applicable piece of advice. Like, whatever policy and procedures you have, make sure they're integrated so people can actually use them. And the more they just run smoothly throughout the day, the more folks are A, not going to be able to break them, B, be forced to comply and use them, but C, happily adapt because it's not disrupting their day and their workflow. So I really appreciate that. I think you used the word agnostic, like it's not going to disrupt anything. It's just going to be kind of neutral and just running. I appreciate that. I know that there's some technology things where it's like, okay, I have to go and do the third party authentication. I have to check the text message before I can log in. I understand the reason for it. Is it a hassle? Yes. Do I have to do it? Yes. But the more we can keep things just running, the more people can't goof them up, which is a good thing because humans do goof things up.
Yes.
I really appreciate this perspective. I appreciate you sharing about, you know, how we got to this point. I'm so interested in that conversation you talked about where there was a debate about quantum computing versus AI. I'm going to be honest, I probably would have been on the quantum side because I remember being very aware of that and thinking this was a serious issue to be following up on, you know, in terms of emerging technology. And I didn't pay as much attention to AI, but I think obviously you've been proved right. And I understand the logic you were using even a couple of years ago that AI is accessible by so many people. And that makes it a huge vulnerability, because it's not just the very sophisticated hackers that we need to be worried about. We need to be worried about the random person, you know, who's randomly able to use new technology as a threat.
Correct. And I think that is the threat. To any company, I think, you know, like one of the messages to our team, regardless of where the, like our dev team, my specific message to our CTO has been, we need to code less and think more.
Okay.
And I think that's the part that AI falls short on today, is, you know, you can throw things in there, it can give you things back, and you actually understand or try to understand what AI is doing. You're like, that's not really right. So we kind of explain AI as like your most intelligent intern.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you ask them a question and say, go do this, they will ask you questions and you will tell them what to do, and they will go out and research and they'll figure stuff out and they'll tell you this. But at some point, you got to sit back and say, that's not right. Because I've been in this industry for 30 years I get where your assumption's coming from, but this is correct. So I think if people think about AI, if you're using it for your business, whether it be marketing or you're trying to do, you know, HTML for your website or whatever, you still have to sit back and say, think. And I think that's the difference, is it is allowing people to that don't know how to code, that they can put up a website and they don't have to have a template. They can literally say, well, this is what I want, and boom, it's done. But somebody has to think, and that's where I think AI's power is right now, is the ability to take some of those mundane learning, you know, aspects and redundant aspects off the table. But we have to sit back and say, okay, we need to think more strategically about what we're trying to ultimately accomplish.
Mm-hmm. I like that as a takeaway, that technology is incredibly powerful. It can be a force for good. It can be a force for bad. It can be a threat, which folks need to be thinking about, but that we can also use technology to fight technology threats. And at the end of the day, I'm hearing you say that we still need the human brain to analyze it and think it through and implement it wisely.
We do.
That's fair enough.
Correct.
That is fair enough.
Yep. AI can ultimately only do two things. It can tell a human what to do, or it can do something. And that do something is limited today, because we don't have AI robots walking around the office.
Not yet.
That's right. to be determined. That's right. Elizabeth, I do have one thing that I think, you know, for anybody who is more security minded, because a lot of people say, hey, you know, my auditors sometimes audit new things differently. Our cyber policies or our insurance looks at different things every year, right? Sure. Because we all know that that's a bill that, you know, keeps going up and up. So when I told you before about how the U.S. government looks at stuff and then tries to push it on industries, one thing that always happens is whatever federal government regulations go into place to regulate the federal government always trickle down to private industry. So anybody who is in, you know, more in that space for cybersecurity, really pay attention to CISA, so the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And then they issue new, what are called binding, and I'm actually reading this so I don't mess up the language, but BODs, but binding operational directives.
Yep.
So usually whatever changes there filters down, and the latest one was released in June. It's 26-04, and it's basically prioritizing security updates based on risk.
Okay.
And there's a lot of changes in there. They go into effect on 7 December for the federal government. It will filter into private industry, and every bank will see changes to items that their auditors will be looking at.
Okay.
And your insurance, cyber insurance carriers will be asking about next year. So it's really important for anybody to really dive in. And again, that's the BOD 2604. That is something important, because everyone doesn't like to get dings on their audits, you know, they like to be ahead of the power curve. So definitely dive into that and pay some more attention to that.
Thank you so much for that specific directive. I really appreciate that. I totally agree that banks typically want to be forward-looking. They don't always know where to look for their forward-looking strategic planning. So I love that very specific piece of advice. I appreciate that. As we wrap up the episode, I usually do ask guests to share maybe one final piece of advice. And I feel like this episode has been very rich with pieces of advice already. So I appreciate that. Anything final you want to wrap up with for our bankers tuning in? I appreciate so much what you've shared, your perspectives on emerging technologies, how to combat threats. What's a final piece of advice you can leave us with?
Have fun with it. For as much as pain and agony can be with regulations, with cybersecurity, have fun with it. And the reason I say that is because, the hardest challenges, and these are hard challenges because, you know, technology can ruin your bank, or it can make it better, like the condiment, right? But have fun with it, knowing that, usually the best solution sometimes is the simplest.
Okay.
But sometimes you have to go through a little bit of a challenge to find it. So that would be my thing is have fun with it. As people on the listening to this may say, oh my God, Carl, you're crazy. There's no fun in trying to figure this out, but have fun with it. But also ask a lot of questions and really, you know, cause some people are very, very strategic. Some people are very, very tactical. Is try and look at both aspects, right? Okay. You say, well, this checks every box. We should use it from a tactical level. But if you don't think about it strategically on how the people will actually use it or how it affects your business, you're going to have problems. But sometimes you think too strategic and don't really think tactical about how it gets implemented or used or what it actually does, then you have problems. So my perspective to any bank listening is try and take both perspectives. And ask the questions, is it tech for tech's sake, or is it tech because it's going to make our business better? And that's the really crux of the issue that everyone should be talking about.
I love that. Thank you so much. Be tactical and have fun. That's an uplifting way to end the episode. Because I do know these can be heavy topics. They can be difficult topics to understand. And I really appreciate that positivity, that we can still enjoy what we're working on, even when we take these issues very, very seriously. Carl, I appreciate your time so much. This has been very, very valuable. I've learned new things. I've learned new perspectives thinking about emerging technology, and I appreciate that so much. Thank you for your time today. To everyone who's tuned in, we appreciate you tuning in for another episode. I've been here with Carl Falk from BotDoc, and this is Elizabeth Holtrup with another episode of Banking Matters.